This old-time radio program was originally aired live, long before the advent of high fidelity. As a result, you may detect an occasional surface noise or volume drop due to transmission problems so common to old radio. We hope, however, that any variance in audio quality will not take away from your pleasure in listening to this, one of the all-time favorite shows.
My guest today is Brandon Novak, famous for his appearances in MTV's Jackass and Viva La Bam. Brandon is also an accomplished pro skater and author of the New York Times bestselling memoir, Dream Seller. Coming up after the break, Sensory Deprivation with Brandon Novak.
Stratos, an aftershave, with a fragrance that seems to capture the freshness and freedom of the windswept sky. Blue Stratos for men.
Brandon, thank you so much for being on the show. I took a couple of notes here, and I, you know, things that I think have represented your life, and it was, to me, what comes to mind is pro skater, Jackass, New York Times bestselling author, and the one that I've got double underlined here is a very smart and bad motherfucker. So I think that's probably the best way that I can think to introduce you. But, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and where we've seen you, what we know you from, things like that.
You know, it's funny, I wear a lot of different hats, I have a lot of different titles that come before or after my name, and it's funny, because I'm as guilty as anyone else when it comes to this, but for so many years, the most important title was always left out, and that was a person in recovery. Right, because what I've learned in my life is that the moment that I don't put that thing first, nothing else fucking matters. Because
right.
Like, then I forget where I come from, and for an alcoholic such as myself to forget where he comes from, it's not a matter of if I'll return, it's when I'll return. That's why I usually, when I talk or speak upon my disease from which I possessed that brought me in, the doors of recovery, it's I'm very upfront. I'm very graphic. As a matter of fact, I keep my past married to my present for the matter of not forgetting where I come from. But with all that being said, you know, I started out as, you know, a skateboarder, a kid who at 7 years old, his mother gave him his first skateboard. And that night when she put me to bed, she said, "Brandon, what would you like me to do with the skateboard?" And I said, "I wanted it in bed with me." She said, "Why?" And I said, "Because if I die, I want it to go with me."
Oh, wow.
It was like God had came down to hand me the Holy Grail in the form of a skateboard. And the trait that I possessed at that very young age transcended or followed me into my drinking and drugging careers that maybe you can relate to, which was, despite any and all adverse consequences that came my way, I did what I had to do to get what I wanted to get, right? Because at the age of 7, I get my first skateboard. I eat it, I breathe it, I sleep it, I dream it. There's no reason for a plan B, a trait, or an option, because I'm going to be a professional skateboarder. Now at 14, I'm the first skateboarder endorsed by Gatorade. They fly me to Chicago to the Quake Growth Building where they make Gatorade at the time. They put me on a treadmill. They put Michael Jordan on a treadmill directly next to me, and they strap these EKGs to our chest, and they give us each Gatorade to see the effects that it has on different sports players. Later on down the line, at 15, I'm designing my pro model for Power Pro Ultimate, and I'm touring the world with Tony Hawk. Then fast forward some years later, you see me, maybe you're familiar with my works on those TV shows Viva La Bam and those movies called Jackass. Those movies were insanely successful in their own right. They had like broke box offices.
It was huge, yeah. Such a big part of life back then. I mean, and still.
Yeah. It kind of created a culture within itself. You know, and you fast forward a few years later, then maybe you read my autobiography, my addiction memoir, written about my life, called Dream Seller.
And you had a graphic novel that kind of supplemented that, right? Not a graph, but like an illustrated.
Yeah. I'd say roughly 6 months ago, the first ever addiction graphic novel was released.
That's really cool.
Yeah. You know, because I travel and that's titled The Brandon Novak Chronicles. And, you know, I travel over the nation and the world, for that matter, and they say, how do we lift the stigma? How do we lift the stigma? I'm always giving talks on
that's, you know, a huge problem. Yeah, even today it's still taboo. I mean, I'm in Hollywood, and it's still, you know, even having guests on this show, it's a very taboo subject where, you know, even though it's such a topic in the spotlight now, there's so many people that are just like, oh, we can't talk about addiction, we can't talk about mental health, we can't. It's just, it's one of those things that, and I don't know why, with as important as it is, you know.
I agree with you, but unfortunately or fortunately, depending upon one's perception, the stigma is lifting because the death toll is rising.
Right.
So, which leads us to the right here, right now, doing a podcast all about addiction. Yeah.
Well, you said something previously that you were saying how you have to let your past be in the forefront of your present and really your future, or else you'll step back into it. And I mean, there's that quote, those who forget the past are condemned to repeat it. And it's
absolutely
almost that same thing, is that you have to remind yourself of your progress. You have to remind, even for those that are having lapses in recovery, you're always still progressing. It's still getting you away from how bad it was or how bad it could potentially have gotten.
100%, right? Again, fortunately or unfortunately, depending upon your perception, I had attempted to get sober plenty of times, which means I checked myself into facilities plenty of times, enough to where I was properly diagnosed as an addict or an alcoholic.
Okay.
Right? And now what I'm about to say, it's not debatable. There's no reason for us to talk about this statement. This is a fucking factual fact. If you're diagnosed as an addict or an alcoholic, all that simply means is you've been diagnosed with a disease that if left untreated, equals death.
Right.
You die, right? But as far as I'm aware, if it's the only fatal disease from which I possess that lies to me in my own voice, that makes me believe the unbelievable, right? Because what diagnosed me with HIV, I'm rushing to the hospital to get medication. I don't want to die, fatal disease. Diagnosed me with cancer, I'm rushing to the hospital to get chemo. I don't want to die, fatal disease. Diagnosed me as an addict or an alcoholic, I need a glass of wine or a bag of heroin to figure out what the fuck's wrong with you for diagnosing me with said disease.
It's an incredible salesman, and that's the thing.
Yeah, and it's even more incredible because I possess this delusional alcohol-ridden brain that lies to me in my own voice that makes me believe the unbelievable. So
right.
I could finish this interview and walk to the pub at the corner and have a glass of wine, and the scary thing is I can make that make complete sense to me.
Oh, it'll
right?
be justified, yeah, completely justified.
Yeah. Totally. So with that being said, I also have selective memory when it plays in favor of my alcoholism.
Right.
Meaning that I can tell you about 6 years back, it was Halloween night. It was the first snowfall of the winter. I went to Ram's Head Pub in Westchester with my now second ex-fiance.
Okay.
I promised her that I was going to have two glasses of wine and be home in bed by 9 p.m. with her. I can talk about it like I just fucking walked in the door from doing it. I can tell you the bar stool I sat on, the barkeep's name that served me, the music that played on the jukebox, and the person that sat to my left. I can tell you about it. Why? Because it was the first time in probably fucking 10 times in my life that I was able to successfully set out to drink two glasses of wine and come home after doing just what I set out to do, right?
Okay.
But oddly enough, what my delusional alcoholic brain will not allow me to remember is being medevaced to four different hospitals in four different states from four different overdoses, It will not allow me to recall my mother buying me a plot. It will not allow me to recall people taking life insurance policies out on me. It will not allow me to recall waking up on life support for 7 days. It will not allow me to recall standing on the corner of Eastern Avenue and Patterson Park letting men blow me for another bag of heroin.
Right.
Why? Because that does not play in favor of my alcoholism, and that actually lets me know that, whoa, I have a problem. And my disease wants no part of that shit. You know, and so that's why I keep my past married to my present.
Yeah, and like you say, it's the safest route, and really it's the most intelligent route because that's the only leverage you have on it.
Fucking right, you know. And the thing is now is that I walked into my first treatment center at the age of 17.
What led to that? When you first decided, okay, maybe I should get help. What was the circumstances?
Well, fuck. There were a lot of different reasons to why I was going to address the issue of addiction or alcoholism. The very first one was to just get fucking people off my back. It was to let everyone know that this was just an overreaction at best. You've simply caught me at a bad time on a bad way and a bad day. So I went into the first one with a completely closed mind and closed heart, comparing out, proving a point why I was not those fucking nut jobs, nor would I ever be.
Well, why would you want to conform? Yeah, because maybe in the back of your head you're thinking these people are making money off of you, you know, and they're wanting to make sure that the train keeps rolling kind of thing.
Absolutely. That's the deal. And then, you know, another thing that I've learned, right, is, you know, I've done a lot of internal work on myself to kind of understand, you know, me and what I think, what I feel, what I like, what I don't like. And what I've come to understand is that also it comes along with the territory of being diagnosed as an alcoholic is all that simply means when I say, hi, I'm Brandon, I'm an alcoholic. It means that I'm defiant by nature, I hate authority, and I'll never, ever, ever fucking conform.
Right.
Right. So therefore, you tell me what I need to do. I tell you I need to fuck off because I possess this job that places me in a lot of positions I don't like to be in. Makes me feel a lot of feelings I don't like to feel, and that job consists of knowing everything. You know. So I walk into that first treatment center, right? I already don't like authority. I won't conform. You tell me what I need to do. I tell you I need to fuck off. That's treatment center number one. Treatment center number 13, right? I had finally been demoralized in just such a fashion from drugs and alcohol. I had been beaten into a state of reasonableness. The pain had become great enough that all of a sudden I was willing to do whatever you suggested. And I walked into that 13th treatment center praying to God to just give me one more chance.
Well, and there's a quote, and I can't remember who it's by, but they say freedom is what you do with what's been done to you. And, you know, that's almost a perfect illustration of addiction is that while the culture is so...
Like
yeah, yeah. Freedom, so it's freedom is what you do with what's been done to you.
Is what you do with what's been done to
done
you.
To you. Yep.
Okay.
So the way that I look at that is that, you know, we, especially you were in such a unique situation when you were in your jackass days that people wanted to see you be wild and crazy. People wanted to see all those guys go to the limit of being crazy. You were rewarded for that.
Well,
and,
that's
you know,
what's fucking crazy, right? I've been diagnosed with a disease. The disease tells me I don't have a disease. Furthermore, lying to me my own voice, it makes me believe the unbelievable. Now I'm already delusional from the get. But take it a step further, now my employment ending up in these movies and these TV shows that are wildly successful, and that my role in these projects consists of the more outrageous my behaviors are, the more outlandish my antics become, the more in demand I am, the higher my ratings go, the more money I fucking make.
Right.
You know?
And you're surrounded by other addicts.
Yeah. And somewhere along the many attempts of my recovery, I really believe that I heard that social acceptability equaled personal recovery. Right. So I believed that the home was big enough, the woman was pretty enough, the account was high enough, and the car was new enough, I had to be doing well. Yet I kept going to these meetings because I knew that I wasn't. I would go to these 12-step meetings and they would say, Brandon, your life's unmanageable. And I believe that my life is unmanageable, but my bank account seemed pretty fucking manageable. Now I'm really confused.
Right, right. And that's the glamour and the commodification, though. I was talking to Jordy, you know, from Twiggy Ramirez in Marilyn Manson.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how the problem with it as well is that drug use, all these things are so glamorized, and it's like that rock and roll lifestyle. You're going to get women. you're going to get the money, you're going to get the car, and it comes along with it. It's justified. So mm-hmm. that even if you are falling apart in the process, look at the rewards that it's giving you. And you're really split with, well, okay, I'm doing all these things, but I must be doing something right because look at what it's gotten me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, paired with the fact that I possess that job that consists of knowing everything, paired with the fact that I refuse to conform, so give me a suggestion, I'll tell you to fuck off. Paired with the fact that I have a closed mind, closed heart, and I'm comparing out, proving a point why I'm not you people, I'm not buying with your son, I'm not drinking your Kool-Aid. Ultimately, to walk into my 13th inpatient treatment center, standing in the basement of a Catholic Charities rehab as this 19-year-old tech thumbs through these donation boxes looking for a pair of used underwear, I had two grand realizations come to play. What I've learned is that my life is lived forward and learned backwards. Thank God I've been sober long enough now to recognize the synchronicity in life's events that have led me to the here and now that proved to me that my higher power runs every fucking thing. I didn't see it at the time, but I can clearly see it right now that the miracles had already began taking place. And right then, I'm a 35-year-old homeless heroin addict standing in the basement of my 13th inpatient treatment center that I've walked into. I'd just woken up off life support. My worldly possessions consist of 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, 1 stick of deodorant. It fits into a bag that doubles as a pillow, a needle, a spoon, and a restraining order that my mother just served her 35-year-old son, me, to get the fuck out of her house. I, like, wanted to kill myself on a daily basis, but I didn't want to hurt myself in the process.
Right.
I was horrible with suicide because I kept waking up, and I was in a position in life where I was so low the curb like a skyscraper. And as this kid thumbs through these boxes, I want to, like, fucking knock his face off because he's so happy to see that I'm back. And I there's no words that could explain properly how fucking bad I felt about it.
Well, he's not seeing it through your eyes, right?
Exactly. Completely different perspective and perception. But he was, but I just couldn't see that in a weird way because he had been where I was at. But it didn't discredit how I felt, so I didn't want anybody that was happy around me because I, you know, hurt people kind of shit.
Right, exactly.
So I'm standing in that basement, and he's thumbing through these boxes looking for a pair of used underwear. I'm praying to God that he finds them, and he doesn't. What he finds is a pair of size 40 women's sweatpants with no drawstring, a woman's tank top, and a pair of size 13 Jesus sandals. Now, I'm not a woman, and I do not wear a size 13, but again, two game-changing things were taking place in the basement of that facility that I had no idea were happening. Number one is, as I'm standing next to him, and he's looking through these boxes for used underwear, I come to the grand realization that job that I possessed that consisted of knowing everything. I said, you know what? You know what I do know is that I don't fucking know. And my very best thinking, despite all that successful shit I share with you, lands me here time after time. And number two, that had forever changed the trajectory of my life. I had no idea it was taking place at that moment, is I was met by the God of my understanding as a direct result of that gift of desperation. And when that God of my understanding showed up in the form of that gift of desperation, meaning the pain had become great enough that I had become willing to do whatever it took, such as where these women were voting, I had experienced a sense of willingness unlike anything I knew that was humanly possible.
And the thing is that you realized it before you were dead. You know, like people like Hunter Thompson, people like Jim Morrison, and even your friend Ryan that, you know, passed way too soon, that just the disease, you know, took them before a realization could occur, before that bottom could be reached. So what was the process for you to... You know, all of a sudden you're going through withdrawals. You've obviously been through withdrawals plenty of times before up until that point. But what really gave you the strength? You know, you've been given this knowledge that you have now. You know, you're totally willing to accept it. But what were those first couple of weeks like on that final time when you were getting help? What was the difference, like, other than being at your worst, you know? Like, really, what was it that clicked?
I get what you're saying, because the reality is from treatment center number one to treatment center number 13, it's not like something magical was said that I had never heard before that was the solution to my never-ending fucking problem, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what happened was I believe the stars had come into alignment, and I was placed in a position where it's that saying, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear.
Right.
Right? So I had done an interview after I got into rehab, and he said, were you depressed? What were you like? And I said, you know when I was depressed? I was depressed before they had found me a bed in this rehab. I'd never been so depressed in my life. But once they told me, right, because I had no money, I was fucking broke. I had nothing. I had 8 scarves, 2 jackets, 3 socks, 6 deodorant, a needle, a spoon, and a restraining order. That's all I owned. And they weren't sure if they could find me a bed. And I went outside of this assessment place, and I'm sitting on the curb, and I'm picking cigarette butts up out of the ashtray, and I'm just fucking chain-smoking these butts. And when he came out, he said, Mr. Novak, we found you a bed. In my mind, I thought, if they don't find me a bed, the very next best thing I could do is I'm going to crawl behind this bush in between the bush and the wall of the building that I was going in for the assessment, and I was just going to lay there. I couldn't move. I was physically – I was demoralized in just such a fashion, man, from drugs and alcohol, that, like, once I got into treatment, there was nothing depressing about it. Because although I had been in treatment 12 previous times and I had lost count of outpatients and detoxes, I knew something was different this time. But what I did different was I didn't say a word, because at this point in time, I was tired of hearing my own fucking voice.
Yeah.
My words held no weight anymore. So what I did differently is I didn't say a fucking word. I actually let my walk do my talk, right? Therefore, I wasn't calling home saying how things are different, I'm doing this. No, I didn't say a word, man. I just let my actions do my talking. And things got better.
Had you tried methadone? Had you tried methadone or Suboxone treatment or anything?
I've tried everything in the past. I've had the implant. I've tried Subutex. I tried Suboxone. I did Vivitrol. You name it. I've tried it. But what I did know for certain with this last treatment center, number 13, was I didn't know if I was coming or going. I didn't know if I was going in just to get a warm meal, a clean bed to sleep in, or a hot shower to get. I had no idea what I was. What I did know for certain is that I didn't want to feel how I felt anymore. The pain had become great enough. I experienced that sense of willingness. So all of a sudden, when you suggested, I accepted. I started following your suggestions because I came to the realization that I don't know, but you must know because you have 7 years clean. So you give me a suggestion, I take it. Guess what? Now I don't feel how I felt when I walked in. Guess what? Now I feel better than I felt when I walked in. And believe it or not, it just kind of snowball affected into the here and now with me over 4.5 years sober. You know what I mean?
That's incredible, man. And I think that's also, unfortunately, the hardest part, though, for people that have a loved one that are dealing with addiction is that they think, okay, look, well, we just have to push them into rehab. We're going to remortgage the house and just force them in, and that'll fix them. And it's just, it doesn't work that way, and it's heartbreaking to say it. But
well,
I mean,
it doesn't work that way sometimes, but then sometimes it does. You know,
I guess.
My best friend who I met in that rehab, that was his first rehab.
Oh, wow.
And he's still sober to this moment. You know, we've spent every year together. We went from the rehab to the halfway to our own apartment. You know, we go on trip. I just got back from Greece with him.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Yeah, that was his treatment center number one. That was my.
But he was mentally ready is the point.
Whatever it was. I'm a firm believer that the difference a day can make, and it takes what it takes until it takes. And who am I to say what it will be for it to take? It's simply not a black and white one size fits all issue. If that were the case, I would have got it at my first treatment center at 17. I think it's
13, 13, there would be no problems with addiction in America right now. So,
yeah,
or across
if
we
had the answer, I would bottle it up. I'd sell it. I'd be a billionaire a billion times over. Coming back to the beginning of this conversation, the reason why I did the addiction graphic novel was you know, because they say, how do we lift the stigma? The stigma is lifting because the death toll is rising. I wrote that book. I'd written this book because what I want to do is I want to make exactly what we're talking about right now, addiction, more of a conversational piece, a dinner table topic. So I do it in the form of a graphic novel. Now I can get it into the Comic-Cons. You know, because the disease of addiction does not discriminate. You know,
not at all.
The lighthouse or the outhouse. The results.
Oh, yeah. It's, if you're rich, if you're poor, it doesn't matter. It's a predator drone that's going to wipe out anything it wants. And in your case, just like mine, I was genetically predisposed on my from my father.
Same.
And, you know, it's just sneaks up. It's in your DNA. And they're finding that now more and more is that, you know, people that as you heavily drink or as you heavily use drugs, that it actually can manipulate your DNA to a place where if you do have a child, boom, they're going to be affected in some way or another. It might not be drugs. It might be being addicted to, you know, there's a million different things, gambling, whatever, but that gene is still there and it can take form in unexpected ways.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So now you're, let's go like 6 months. What was like the longest you had been sober before this final?
The longest I ever put together was 90 days.
Okay.
And all I had literally done was just physically put down the drugs, right? Because what would happen is I didn't want to shoot heroin or cocaine anymore because I know the death, the destruction, the despair that that brings. But I was furious that I couldn't drink like a quote-unquote normal human being, right?
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, I'm not an alcoholic because I don't steal for red wine. I don't go into detox when I don't have it. It doesn't dictate my life or what I do with it. And so for 90 days, I didn't do anything, and I was miserable every fucking day of those 90 days. And
yeah.
Then I ultimately drank again. And then I got this sponsor, and he said, Novak, you're different. At the bottom of your wine glass is a rig every time. And I'm like, you know, because it wasn't like I would get drunk, get loaded, and go out and fucking shoot dope and coke immediately. I would never do that, actually. Like, but the progression would take place, you know?
Right. Right, and I think that was Nikki Sixx, the same thing, is that, you know, he could have a couple beers, and then 3 weeks later, he's back in it, and it's just a gradual progression. But for some people, it doesn't work that way. You know, for some people, they're able to have a couple beers, and it's fine.
Yeah.
But it's just person to person, and unfortunately, it's a trial by error kind of thing, you know? But
that's it, man.
So let me ask you this. What role would you say that creativity played in you getting better? Because, you know, especially with this graphic novel, there's a great deal of – and writing your book, that's a huge part of creativity. And I personally believe that expressing those feelings when you're going through them, figuring out whether it's drawing something, whether it's writing your thoughts in a journal, some way of getting them out of that bottle in your head, that it can be cathartic.
It absolutely can. But to be 100% transparent with you, the first year I wanted no part of any of these creative outlets.
Okay.
I didn't want to skate. I didn't want to write. I didn't want to do anything because I lost the belief that anything that I would produce without being on drugs or alcohol would be presentable to the world. I lost the faith that I could do this while sober.
And that's why it becomes you. It completely becomes who you are. And that is why it robs you of that.
Literally. So I was blessed, truly blessed, to have people in my life that did not allow me to leave that answer as was. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, yeah, but no. Here's a list of things. They worked with me. They worked around me to get through my barriers that my disease was creating, you know, because it was
right.
All my disease talking. It was my disease creating this barrier between me and reality. And I had people that really saw in me what I didn't see in myself. They saw the willingness, right? They weren't doing it just because I was me. They were doing it because, like, they could see that I was doing what it would take to get better. But some things I was just not physically capable of doing. So,
got it.
So like my co-author, Joe Franz, I wouldn't write. I lost the ability to believe that I could write good without drinking red wine. And he said, okay. He talked to my therapist while I was in treatment, and they blocked off an hour out of each day. And he would come visit me on Sundays. He was my only visitor, him and CJ, my assistant. They would come, and he would give me a list of topics that I needed to, but I couldn't write. I couldn't put pen to paper, which is how I wrote my whole first book, literally pen to paper. And then I gave it to my co-author, and he typed it and turned 12 chapters into 23, and the rest is history. But so he said, here's an audio recorder, because I said, I could talk it. So he gave me an audio recorder, and he gave me a list of four topics that I needed to discuss on Sunday. And he was going to come back next Sunday, and I had to give him that back. Right? And now, even though I didn't believe that I could do it sober, I said that I would do it. And I was changing the way that I thought, the way that I lived, and the things that I did. So I meant what I said, and I said what I meant. So if I said yes, even though I was only 60 days into treatment, then I was going to do what I said. So even though I didn't have much faith in myself, I still did it because I told him I would. And I wanted to be accountable for my actions. And then he came next Sunday, I gave him the tape. And then he came the following Sunday, he said, holy shit. I've listened to this tip. This is some of the best work that you've done to date. Because the fog had lifted. I had, like, like four or five new characters emerged out of nowhere that I never would have remembered before, you know?
Wow. And that's because you had that discipline and structure behind you in the form of your friends.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
If there are, we have to assume that there's people that are going to be listening that are in the midst of trying to get better, trying to find recovery, whether it be that they're suffering from depression or suffering from addiction or a relapse in their recovery. What would you say to those people right now that are listening as just a form of encouragement?
To fucking put your hand out and reach out for help. Because the reality is, if I could do this thing on my own, I would have done it years ago. I wouldn't be on this phone with you. I wouldn't be in a 12-step fellowship. I'd be going about my merry way, just staying sober one day at a time. The fact is this disease is so much bigger than I am. It's taken out such bigger, badder people than I ever will be. So now I hold a special place in my heart for this disease, and I have a healthy respect and fear for this disease, and I know what I'm up against because I've done enough internal work to recognize what the deal is. To know that together we can do this. Divided, I absolutely will fucking drink, and for me to drink is to die. So all I simply say is just reach your hand out and ask for some help. You know, one of the things that I do is I help people find help. And if you're interested in allowing me to potentially help you find the help that you need to get yourself out of the position that you have created for yourself due to drugs and alcohol, you can personally reach me at 610-635-9092.
That's awesome, man. So... Yeah. You know, and that's the thing is there are so many options. Even like here in California with Medi-Cal, there are treatments that will do this for free. There are ways that you can get all types of, you know, addiction treatment, mental health services, and physical health services here completely free. And that pretty much is, I would say, carte blanche across the U.S. And internationally, I think there's programs in the U.K., France. I mean, they're finally recognizing because, you know, like U.K. and Australia Canada – where they sell codeine over the counter. They're just now starting to realize, oh, this might be turning into a problem. But they're at least starting to also fund addiction treatment centers in those countries.
Yeah.
So the one unique thing about you is you found your passion very, very early in life with skateboarding. But there are a lot of people that when you're addicted, it becomes your passion. It becomes your everything. So do you have any tips for people that are struggling to find a passion, that are struggling to find some kind of path in life after addiction for them to be able to, you know, create careers, create something that they're connected and passionate about?
You know, for me, what's allowed me to believe in myself, what's allowed me to push myself and to expand my horizons is the faith that I have in my higher power. And seeing what my higher power does for me on a daily basis. And what I always say is that the 12 steps, the God of my understanding brought me to a 12-step program, and the 12 steps brought me back to the God of my understanding. And with that being said, all I can suggest is what my experience has been for me, that has worked for me. This is not fact. This is just strictly opinion-based, is that the 12 steps allowed me to find a purpose in my life. So that's what I recommend.
What about kids that are huge in skateboarding now that, you know, they might be a little too anxious or fearful of failure, but they want to try to get into some form of skateboarding in a competitive tournament professional way? Would you have any tips for young kids?
Just to never give up, man, you know.
That's life in general, yeah.
Yeah, you know, just never give up. Do what you love, man. Do what you love. Life's too short not to.
What about something you need to tell yourself today?
Today, what I need to tell myself is stick to the basics so, God willing, I never have to go back to the basics.
Yeah, that simplifies it, man. That's, you know, I was talking to Bruce Buffer the other day, and he said that he grew up around Steve McQueen. And Steve McQueen said to him once that the movie about life, if there had to be the title, that it should have been The Great Escape. Because that's really all we're ever trying to do is escape from ourselves, escape from something to just find that simpler meaning, that simpler purpose, and to find that passion.
I mean, the longer that I remain sober, I've come to find out that the longer I stay sober, the less that I know. You know what I mean? The older I get, the less I know.
Same here for sure.
And it's like, you know, from the day that I walked in and was blessed with the gift of sobriety to today, I walked into that 13th facility with absolutely no plan. And that lack of plan has produced the best of plans, because it allowed me to understand that I am my problem. If I just get the fuck out of my way and follow some suggestions of people that have been here before me and did it better than I have, that, like, things will be okay. You know?
But you still must have times when you feel like you're slipping a little bit in terms of, like, getting anxious or things are slipping out of control with your schedule. How do you get centered now versus then?
Well, the beauty is the beauty of awareness. You know, ignorance is bliss. When you don't know, you're not to be held accountable. When you know, you're to be fucking held accountable. And now I know, you know. So the moment these fears, these resentments, these angers, jealousy, envy, you know, ego, when they pop up, I can immediately spot it, man. And that's such a blessing.
Whereas before, you would react. You would react to it.
Or I would just buy into it. And then believe that everyone else is the fucking problem. The reality is there is no their part. It all comes back to self, to me. And the only thing that I can control is me, my thinking, my attitude, my behavior. I can't put unrealistic expectations on people, places, and things, because I will be let down every fucking time. The sooner I realize that I control me, the easier life becomes, because now there's no expectations on what you should do.
Would you mind giving that phone number and your social media and just ways that people can get in contact with you if they do want to reach out, if they are listening, that, you know, they're listening right now and are struggling through something?
Absolutely, man. If somebody's out there and they're caught up, you know, in a position that they're trying to get themselves out of, you know, whether it's a needle, a bag, a pipe, a bottle, a pill, and you can't find your way out of this position that you've created for yourself, call me personally, directly, at 610-635-9092. And if you want to kind of figure out who the fuck I am, what the fuck I do, you can just go to my website, Brandon Novak, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, Novak, N-O-V-A-K.com. That's all one word. And that can kind of take you down all my different rabbit holes of all my different things.
And I think the one thing I really want to emphasize, just like you, is that it does get better. You know, you are never alone in this. Tomorrow is always a day that allows you to move forward, to expand on what you know, and to help others and become the person you know you can be. Because we all doubt ourselves. We're all afraid to fail or embarrass ourselves somehow, but that's okay. Everything is a stepping stone for progress in this.
Absolutely.
And especially with yourself. I mean, look, I don't think there is a bigger contrast than what you were describing when you were at that Catholic Charities versus now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. And I'm sure that you probably hear this a lot, but I'm still going to say it because I really want to thank you for your words, for sharing your passion and your struggles. It's incredibly brave of you to be able to turn your addictions into a service to others. And it's something that is, you don't see it very often, you know? And I know for a fact with your book and just with your words, you've inspired so many, not alone, like sports, you've inspired people. You've inspired people in life. You've inspired people to get sober. And it's amazing, man. I cannot thank you enough.
Yeah. I mean, I've been extremely blessed to where my defects have become my assets, man. You know, and that's only through my higher power that this has happened. I take no credit in anything that I've done. All I did was know that I don't know and got out of my way. It's really fucking ironic the way it works. And I've just had good teachers because I was ready to learn.
And that's it. As soon as you really feel like you're ready and there really is no other option, then that's when you can allow it into your heart and allow it into your mind and allow it to take over that voice that does say you know better.
That's it.
So the last thing I want to say is I do try to have any listeners, if they are kind of stuck in the hamster wheel of their thoughts, if they need a distraction for a little bit, you can go on my website at sensoryshow.com, and there's a way that you could submit a drawing. If you want something to do, draw me how you're feeling. Draw a doodle on your phone about how you're feeling in this moment. Put it down on paper or send it in, and we'll put those up on our social media, and just so that you can at least have some kind of release instead of just sitting there thinking about, you know, what's going wrong, because like Absolutely. I said, tomorrow always is another day. And I'd love to invite you to do that too. If you're interested in submitting a little doodle of how you feel today or how you feel about this whole process, you're welcome to. But that's at sensoryshow.com, and or you can go on social media. That's at Radio Withdrawal, and just do hashtag extrasensory, and you'll see, you know, your drawings and everybody else's, that you can see that you're really not alone in this. It affects everybody, and there's always a way to get better. There's always a way to beat this and to put the best version of yourself out there. So, again, Brandon, if there's anything else you want to say, I definitely would love to hear it, and I appreciate so much you being on.
Yeah, man, thank you for giving me the opportunity and believing that I had something worthwhile to add or contribute to your deal, man. And I think I've stated my piece. So with that, I wish you Godspeed, my friend. God bless
right
you.
On.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, man. Have a good
Take
one.
Take care, brother. Cheers.
Peace. Bye.
I want to thank everyone for listening and remind you to go to sensoryshow.com for information on new episodes and to send in any drawings or creations that represent you, where you can see submissions from my guests as well as others. And if you are struggling, or if you would like to get information on obtaining free mental health or addiction services in your state, please feel free to DM me anytime, and remember, you are never alone in this. Help is only a message away, and we are all in this together. I'd also like to take a moment to thank my sponsors, Shure Microphones, Rewind Audio for the best vintage hi-fi sales and rentals, Mario Badescu Skincare, Liquid Death Spring Water, Schaefer's Garmin Hotel for the coolest denim on the planet, Sterling Assault, Vibes, Oxford Pennant, Rockin' Monkey Stickers, Lost in Time Designs for my amazing artwork, and Bitpart for the incredible music. Please visit sensoryshow.com for more information on those sponsors and how to support them. Thanks for making the show possible.